Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
It's Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
This is out to left field. Scalded by a Rosarena. Two swings, and this game is tied in the ninth inning. Cal Raleigh and Randy Rosarena go back to back, and we are right back where we started.
There you have it, home run call of the day. Randy Rosarena going deep. Aaron Goldsmith with the call, with the home run call of the day. What a week it's been. It's been a really good week. It's just been a really, really good week. I've really enjoyed all of our podcasts, all of our conversations, all of it. So we're going to keep them coming because I'm motivated. My senses are keen. My adrenaline's high. I throw in the cougar in the car. I'm ready to go. Let's go. Ready for another great baseball season. We're 3 weeks in and it's already been great. All right. Maybe one of the reasons I'm so jacked up is because of the conversation I had for today's podcast. It's with Dayton Moore, former general manager of the Kansas City Royals, now special advisor for the Texas Rangers. You aren't going to find a person who is better to talk about the art of building a baseball team, everything that's important about being a baseball player, being on a baseball team, being an executive, all of it. It's just so awesome. Everything you want to hear about the foundation of this great game, that you're going to hear from Dayton Moore. Yep. And then on top of it all, it's not every day we get a podcast where we talk a little bit about a potential run for governorship. Yep. Dayton talks about how he's dabbling with the idea of potentially running for governor for the state of Kansas, where he's born and bred. So that was fascinating. And also how baseball had molded him to come to that conclusion, to come to that place where he felt like he might be equipped to do that, and how he feels like a lot of people in baseball might be of the same ilk, that they might be the people who are able to help people in public life, public service, politics. Although politics is, it's not like baseball. No, that's why we don't talk about politics a lot, but we do talk about the great game of baseball. And if it so happens that one of the people who we're talking about is also talking about integrating himself into the world of politics, then so be it. We got it all on this podcast. Yep. Dayton Moore, I really think you're going to enjoy this. I know I enjoy sitting down with Dayton, always do. Here you go. Here's Dayton Moore. All right, there is no human being on the planet I'd rather be talking to right now than Dayton Moore. Dayton, always, man, always.
That's nice of you, Rob.
Always bring a smile to my face when I see you. I saw you in Texas. First of all, how are you? Good?
You doing well? Yeah, everybody's great.
You know, yeah. It's another year. Here we go, right?
It is. And so there's a lot of, I want to get to talk to you about. And, you've had such, I mean, you epitomize so much that is good. I'm not just saying this because you're here. Even if you weren't here, Dayton, I would say this. I said Dayton Moore epitomizes so much good about what baseball can be, what baseball executives can be, what human beings can be. And I mean that. And I, you know, I always go back to, I was talking with just the other day that your name came up and we were talking about, I think actually it was sort of around the lockout, and lockout talk. And it said how you gave sort of this impassioned speech, I guess, would lack of a better term, about how, you know, when the cutting of minor leagues, cutting of minor league teams, how this was going to impact the future of baseball. And I just, I'll never forget that, man. Like, I'll never forget it, Dayton. Like,
well, that's nice. I'm humbled that you would say that. I just, we believe so passionately in our game and the benefits that it provides people. And, I want every player to have their chance to play, professional baseball. And obviously without, the opportunities that exist today, I mean, the funnel's been narrowed. There is less opportunities. And, I believe just so passionately in our game and what it does to mold human beings and prepare them for life outside of baseball. And, I just want so many kids to get an opportunity and get a chance. And, that's, and you know, and I know that patience is probably the greatest virtue that a baseball person can have. And that, you've got to be able to give players more runway and more opportunity, and because they all develop at different rates and different stages. No two players are the same. The evolution's different for every player. And understanding the evolution of a player tells you that patience is required. Well, the system that we have today doesn't allow us to be very patient. And, players are being released prematurely. They're not getting the necessary opportunities and at-bats. And not only are we losing out on, future impact talent, we're also creating bitterness in the lives of those players, because they know you can't fool a baseball player. Mm-hmm. They understand the commitment, the sacrifice it takes, and they understand, they know in their hearts, if they've got more left in the tank, more to prove, more potential. And, they're getting let go and not getting opportunities, and it's creating some bitterness. And let's face it, this game can turn you into something you don't want to be. It can do that to all of us. But if you know you've gotten your fair shake and you've been given opportunity, you manage things a little bit better, internally. And so that's why we've just always been very passionate about making sure players get an opportunity, to live out their dream. And I think that's the beauty of the game.
So there's so much in what you just said, Dayton, that I want to touch on and sort of what I planned on touching on, but also offshoots of it. But you had mentioned the word patience, and really one of the things that we had just talked about, like just before we came on, was an example of patience with one of the players with the Rangers, right? I mean, it's in Tyler Mahle. It's one of these things where I really, really have a hard time being patient as a reporter, as a writer, as a podcaster. It's a very, very difficult thing for executives and for baseball teams. It's very, very difficult. And then you get to the beginning of a season, what leads into the beginning of the season in spring training. And you just made the example I thought was a good one with Tyler, right?
Well, it's crazy. He's in spring training, the data's not good. And of course he's coming off Tommy John surgery and pitched a few starts last year towards the end. So hopefully it's going to come back this year. And in spring training, it was, just really wasn't coming out good. The data wasn't great. And there was one person in the whole organization that wasn't worried. Well, probably two. Tyler wasn't worried, and then Mike Maddox wasn't worried. You know, I remember talking to Mike with 10 days to go left in spring training, and I said, what are you seeing in Tyler? Are you worried about him? He said, nah, not at all. He's going to be fine. And so, you know, when you have a veteran baseball person like Mike Maddox reassuring, and because he's going to tell the truth. I mean, he's not going to sugarcoat anything. And, you know, when you have someone like that believing, you know, in one of his pitchers, it puts everybody at ease. And sure enough, you know, his last spring training start, it was a night game. I forget who we were playing. Might have been playing San Francisco or somebody there in surprise. And all of a sudden it came out. You know, you saw some 93s and 94s. The breaking pitch had more sharpness to it. He had more rhythm, more repeatability with his delivery. And he was starting to lock in. And but that just goes – it's just so important. I mean, the data is important. We all know that. And you've got to look at the data, and you've got to understand the data. But nothing replaces you know, strong veteran baseball men with great eyes and that understand the evolution of a player, the evolution of what a pitcher goes through in spring training. And, to have a guy like Mike who, you know, has that strong conviction, you know, gives us all, lets us all sleep a little better at night, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, and you must have some great examples of trying to make those decisions leading in, whether it was with the Braves or whether it was with the Royals, making those decisions. And even back then, a lot of times you didn't have the numbers, you didn't have the analytics. And maybe Dayton, like you said, that we're at this point where we're trying to figure out, we have all this information. Well, what should we prioritize when judging a guy out of spring training who should make the opening day roster? But you must have a ton of examples of having to lean on your eyes, having to lean on your coaches, having to lean on people there along with whatever analytics you had to actually say, this guy, I believe in him. And just because he wasn't good in the Cactus League or the Grapefruit League, I have faith that he is going to be good when the third deck comes around.
No doubt. You know, I'm very thankful for the information and the data that we have out there today. And, but I'm also extremely thankful and appreciative and proud that I grew up in an era where you learned from veteran baseball people. You had to establish your own processes for evaluation. You had to you were marinated in scouting and player development. And, you know, there are people in the game today that were marinated in data. And again, I respect that, but there's also people that were marinated in raw evaluation, player development, the evolution of a player. They had to learn it with their own eyes and rely on examples of players past that they were a part of and be able to, make decisions based on that information as well. And some of it was gut and instinct and understanding the heart of the player. And I'll never, ever, I tell guys all the time, understanding the heart of the player is the most important part of it. That is the most important part of the process. Who has the heart to compete? Who has the heart to and the desire and want to learn, to be a great teammate? Who's going to keep pursuing this game after failure after failure? And, you know, the data doesn't tell you that, but it's all important. And that's why it's so important for, I believe, the organizations today to have a very healthy blend of individuals that were marinated in different areas and have expertise in all these, you know, in different roles. And, but I think, Rob, I think one of the things that can, you know, just jam us up a little bit today, as you said, I mean, we've got all this information and all the data. And we're more prepared to make decisions today than ever before. I mean, whatever opportunities present themselves today in Major League Baseball, rest assured that all 30 Major League teams are prepared to make a decision. Now, I don't know if they will. You still got to have somebody that's going to stand up and press that leadership button and say, we're making this decision today. I know there's a lot of gray area in this. I mean, the data says – it's not a perfect player. The scout says, go get him. Or the scout says, stay away from him. And the data might say, well, give him a chance and what have you. But somebody's still got to step up and press the leadership button today on what's on the waiver wire, a potential trade, a free agent who's out there. It might be a player that's performing well in Mexico. you know, all over the world. And, but we've got information ready to make decisions today. Like I said, better than any other time in the history of our game, but we've got to have strong leaders that are willing to step up and say, you know what? There's a good chance that this decision might not work, but I'm still going to press the leadership button. It gives our organization an opportunity to move forward, and we're going to see what happens. Pat Gillick used to say all the time that, Pat got criticized sometimes for, and they called him Staying Pat, right? You know, he wouldn't do anything. And, but he was evaluating his own players, and he knew his own players, and he understood that the most important part is to get your own players right, and there's an evolution to their development. But, Pat would say that, you know, it's important to always, you know, churn over, you know, the bottom quarter of your roster, you know, give guys an opportunity, shuffle guys in and out a little bit. And, because you never know who's going to end up being a star someday. And if one player can come up and help you win a game today or preserve your bullpen for the next week, I mean, it's really important to get those decisions right.
You know, CY is the guy who you work with in Texas, is certainly has proven that he's not afraid to make the tough decisions. I always use the example that you gave leading into the trade deadline a couple of years ago, the year you won the World Series, about how he said, was very convicted and like, we're going to have to trade these guys if we think we're going to win the World Series. But Dayton, I think that, you know, to your point, there's so much information. And then I'm anxious to get your perspective on, do our executives, when you get into that role, being paralyzed by too much, and maybe even back then, I mean, maybe even before we had all this stuff, that you had too many cooks in the kitchen, not you, but other guys had too many cooks in the kitchen. Now it's 10 times as many cooks and 50 times more recipes. So,
well, you always did. You're right. Because, you know, scouts, player development people, medical staff, front office individuals, they all had strong opinions and strong convictions. And you still had to have, you know, people like John Schuerholz who weren't afraid to make a decision, people like Bobby Cox that weren't afraid to, you know, go against the grain at times. And, you know, you mentioned CY. CY's, you know, we've been around some great competitors. I'm not sure I've been around somebody who has a passion to compete like Chris Young. And he was like that as a player, as we know. He's like that as a GM, president. He wants to win at everything. And you know, he drives the train. And if you just stay in his wake, I mean, you're gonna freaking move along at a high rate of speed, because he's got the throttle down every single day. And you know, there's a lot of wonderful baseball people out there right now, in my opinion, that you know, have, you know, some very, very strong qualities. But I think the desire to compete and the desire to understand the evolution of a player and the heart of a player is still the most important part of it. And CY has that package.
I love that. I love the heart of the player. I mean, it's such an enormous part of this. And, you know, so, and that leads to sort of the patience and the evaluation of these beginnings. So you have a guy, you have the conviction in Mike Maddox about Tyler, and it works out. Now you get into a season, say, with somebody else, and you have that conviction, and maybe they start off slow. Maybe your team starts off slow. And everyone magnifies the first day, the first week, the first 2 weeks. With your Royals at 2014, you didn't get off to a great start that year, right? 2015, you did get off to a great start, but 2014, it wasn't a great start. How difficult is it for someone in that chair to be like, okay, I am convicted in the team that we put together, and we are not going to overreact to what's going on early?
Well, it requires a team around you that can constantly remind you of the fundamentals of managing a Major League Baseball team in the first 30, 40 games. Okay. So for example, I remember asking Bobby Cox one time, I said, Bobby, when should we, you know, how should we go about the start of the season? And, you know, what should we be looking for? And how can we help you? And, you know, Bobby was always so gracious. And Bobby said, let them play for 30, 40 games. After 30, 40 games, we'll have a pretty good understanding of the general health of our team, how it's trending, you know, you know, how players are progressing, who's got a chance to have a great year, who's underachieving a little bit. You know, we'll have our minor leaguers playing a little bit. We'll have a better feel for how they're developing and what teams are getting off to, you know, a good start, what teams aren't, who might be the individuals that are available around the trade deadline, how we can start mobilizing our people. And so we've always kind of taken that advice and that philosophy and trust in our evaluations of the off season. I mean, we worked extremely hard, to put a team together. Let's let it play out. You know, I've always been a firm believer is whatever our valuation was in the minor leagues with our minor league players on November 1, that's where our players should start. If we felt like the player should go back to double A on November 1, put him in double A. If we felt that he's ready to go to triple A or a full season, put him in the full season, regardless of what happens in spring training, unless there's just something so obvious, whether it's an injury or just so obvious that, you know, he's got to fix this delivery or this mechanical flaw and you need to keep him back or put him, you know, at a different level. But just because a player has a great spring training, I necessarily, you know, you wouldn't just elevate him because he had a great spring training. And, there's reasons why some guys have, you know, very good spring trainings and not so good spring trainings. And, so especially with where they are in the phase of their development, but I've always felt just let them play 30, 40 games. Just stay kind of neutral, stay even keeled, don't live in the extremes. And, you know, the players will tell you based on how they're performing and their work habits. And, they'll tell you what you need to do to strengthen your team.
Have you ever gotten the vibe in those first couple of weeks? And not to say that you were going to make changes, but the vibe of, hey, I feel really good about this. Maybe it was 2014, right? Maybe it was 2015. Or conversely, maybe it was the vibe like we just had, the Red Sox got blown out by the Rays and Alex Cora after the game said, listen, you know, he had sort of this rare after game, we got to be better, very pointed thing. And I would imagine he did that because he felt the vibe of preparing sure. for the game was not good. You ever get that vibe?
Sure. I mean, it's a game. We've got people, everybody in this game has reached the top of their profession. They're striving for perfection. We're trying to perfect something that's imperfectible. We know that, right? But that doesn't mean you should stop striving for perfection. I've always felt if you don't strive for perfection, you're going to be beaten by the person who does. And so, there's going to be frustration. And let's face it, you need frustration. You need emotion to get through 162 games. And, you know, it's part of it. And, you know, Alex knows his team better than anybody else. He knows the personalities. And sometimes he may be saying something just for one or two people. Mm-hmm. He may be saying it to the fans. You know, I told a player the other day, remember when you're talking to the media, you're talking to your teammates, and you're talking to the fans. Okay. So whether you like the question or not, whether you think it's a good question, a dumb question, you're not talking to the journalist. You're not talking to the reporter. You're talking to the fans and you're talking to your teammates. And so if you're talking to your teammates, I mean, talk to your team. What message do you want inside that clubhouse? How do you want those individuals, your teammates, your peers, the most important part of your development? How do you want them to perceive you? And of course, you know, the fans, it's our job to inspire and motivate the fans to come out to the ballpark. Let them get to know you a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, open up who you are. Let them give them a desire and a want to connect with you. And so it's okay to practice. Get in front of the mirror and practice answering questions. I mean, that's what you do. Those are the fundamentals that you have to master if you're going to be successful in all aspects of this game. And it's an important part of it to be able to communicate.
You know, I think it's so true. That's the human element, even from honestly, Dayton, from the journalist's point of view, like we know how to, like the baseball player knows how to play baseball. The journalist maybe knows how to spell, knows how to write, but when they get in front of somebody, are you able to interact? Are you able to just have a conversation? Are you able to articulate yourself? And this leads me to something I wanted to ask you about, where, you know, Ron Washington had said, you know, hey, no phones in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest with you. Like when I walk into a clubhouse now, it's immediately everyone's in front of their locker immediately looking at their phone. I'm not saying that the phone, I'm guilty of this like everybody else, but still, I understand where he was coming from, and I like the idea of it for this exact reason. Because human interaction and the things that we're talking about is so important, and that can be an exercise, a muscle that is flexed when you're not away, when you are away from the phone. You know what I'm saying?
No doubt. I mean, Ron Washington, what he's simply trying to do, he's trying to create a family. He wants unity in his clubhouse. He wants oneness of purpose with his team. And he knows that the way for that to happen is they've got to interact with one another and talk about things. They got to get to know each other's heart and understand each other. And you're only going to do that by spending time and being present and communicating, you know, with your team and your coaches. And look, we've got a lot of different people in clubhouses today. Clubhouses are larger than ever before. The travel parties are huge. And you want to be able to get to know the individuals that you work with. I mean, because the one thing I know, Rob, and you know, in this game, baseball brought us all together, but it's the people in the game that sustain us. It's the relationships that get us out of bed the next day and allow us to continue to pursue this game that we've loved since we were little boys. But without those relationships, you can't be the best version of yourself. You have to have people sharpening one another. Iron sharpens iron. There's no truer statement when it comes to growing a team, growing a family. And of course, you know, leaders shape culture. Your general manager, your owner, which, by the way, are the three most important relationships that you can have in an organization. If your general manager and your owner and your manager are getting along and they're communicating and they're transparent and they like each other and they enjoy spending time with each other, you're probably going to have a healthy organization. And that's really, really important. And somebody in that group has to be responsible for creating pathways for those relationships to thrive. And it's usually the GM, making sure that he's got a good relationship with the manager and the owner, and he can bridge the gap and create pathways for all those relationships to thrive. So leaders are shaping culture, but the players are growing the culture. Without the players are the ones that grow the environment. The players are the ones that ultimately guide the success. And, you know, front offices and leadership, again, have to go to work every single day to serve the players on the field. The players are the product. What can we do each and every day to provide opportunity for our players to get better? And we look at that when statements like that are made. I think most people automatically just go to catch, hit, field, run, throw, execute, pitches, whatever. Ron Washington knows that for that to happen, they've got to like, they got to want to work with one another. They got to want to be teammates. They got to care about each other. Well, you can't care about somebody unless you know them and you have a relationship with them. You've got to want your teammate to succeed worse than you want to succeed yourself. And when you can put the needs and wants and desires of everybody else first, and your own needs, wants, and desires second, and you're willing to disadvantage yourself for the good of your teammate and for one another, you know, that's a beautiful thing. You know, we got a player named Marcus Semien who I enjoy. I mean, I can't take my eyes off him because when he gets to the ballpark, he's always doing something. He's always trying to get better. You know, he's on the field. He's working every single day. And there's a lot of guys that are working in the cages. Every player's working, right? I just get a chance to see Marcus up close, more important, you know, more up close. But, you know, then when he has a quiet time, you know, he wants to talk about, you know, he's not on the field. He wants to talk about his kids and his family and you know, showing videos of his son, you know, with a walk-off hit the other day. You know, those are the things that make it special. And that's what Ron Washington wants to create. He's not doing it for himself. He has that. Ron Washington has that. Yeah. He's got relationships all over the game. He's earned those because he's real and he communicates with people and he's got passion. He's got energy. He's just trying to model the behavior he wants seen in other people. And it's a beautiful thing.
Who is the best player that you remember of executing that and bringing different all corners of the clubhouse together to sort of get the message you're talking about.
Boy, you're putting me on the spot.
Well, I mean, I know Hosmer was really good. You know, Hosmer's great. From Ibanez, you know, I like, so I'm throwing some names at you.
There's so many different guys. I mean, I go back to, you know, I've always felt that if you got, of course, when we first, you know, got into baseball, it's a 25 man, you know, roster. Now it's 26. But let me just say this, that all 26 players, for your team to be successful, all 26 players have to be leaders. Now, there might be one or two that have influence over the remaining 25 or 24 or what have you. It may have more influence than others, but they all have influence over somebody. And they're all going to be needed to step up over 162 to lead at some level. Okay. It might be just a one-on-one coffee in the morning. An encouragement word during the game, maybe a stern word, hitting somebody with the truth at some point in time in a way that's necessary and respectful. But we all have influence over somebody. It might just be one or two people in that clubhouse. But like you said, there are a few that have influence overall. But and you know, you've got so many different, you know, subcultures within the culture now, right? And again, that's the thing I'm sure Ron Washington and every manager, they're trying to break down. How can we be at one? And, you know, Bruce Bochy does a masterful job of that. Bobby Cox did. Ned did. And they were all spectacular about, you know, doing that and allowing, you know, players to kind of be themselves. But, you know, we've got to understand that it's all about, you know, it's all about us. It's we and us. It's not I. It's not my. And, but you know, there's a lot of players. I mean, you mentioned Hosmer. I mean, he's really good. I mean, Moose was a great competitor. Salvi always had personality and energy on the field. Jeff Francoeur, great energy. Martin Prado was highly respected, had a lot of, credibility in the clubhouse. You know, Brian McCann, Adam LaRoe. I mean, there's Adam Wainwright. I mean, I can go on and on with guys. You know, I look at our team right now. With the Rangers, and there's so many, you know, high quality person people, and I think we get, you know, people look at us, they say, well, they're not real flamboyant, they're, you know, they just kind of real professional, but you know, that's just who they are. They're really focused in trying to be, you know, a great baseball player. And again, to be successful today in the major leagues, you've got to be extremely focused on the moment. You got to be able to forget about yesterday. Don't think too much about tomorrow. Just focus on what you got accomplished today. Cause if you're off by this much, you're going to lose. I mean, Alex Gordon was a master. I mean, Alex Gordon was so focused on today and what he had to do. Never saw him show really negative emotion about what happened yesterday, and I'd ask him, you know, we got so and so at the end of the series. He'd like, well, I'm just focused on today. Right. And so, but there's been so many players, Rob, you know, through the years, and I've always been, you said some nice things earlier in the podcast about, you know, personally and what have you, and I appreciate that. I'm humbled by that, but truthfully, I've always just been inspired by players. Every player's inspired me to a level where, and when you're inspired by players at a high level, you want to do the absolute best for them, and it inspires you to do more and try to get, you know, the right people around and encourage them and believe in them. And, you know, those are really, really, you know, I think important principles. And
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans. And the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
No, what I was going to say, Dayton, is that, you know, I think that having these conversations like we're having right now, it's important for me. It's important for us. It's important for people just to have a reminder of what you said it yourself. Baseball brings us together, but these are the lessons and these are the values and these are the structures that should shape all of our lives. Like, I want to go out and I want to right now to go to my kids and say, hey, listen, let's have a conversation. Like, and so I appreciate that. And this is going to be a weird segue to it, but we had talked earlier about your potentially getting into politics, and you had talked about a little, we had talked again, this is before we started the podcast, about how what you have done in baseball really sort of lends itself to potentially what you could do in politics. Before you get into that, I do want to sort of just set the stage of where you're at with that. There had been some reports about the governorship in Kansas and things like that. Just where you're at with everything.
Well, I appreciate you asking that. You know, it was probably about 7 or 8 months ago, you know, we were approached about really running for Congress in the 3rd District, where we reside in Kansas. And, you know, I never really thought a ton about that. I've always paid attention to current events. I care deeply about issues that affect families and our community and the next generation. I've always been very interested in those types of topics. And so, you know, we started meeting with people and we went to Washington, D.C. and met with a lot of the key leaders in D.C. And then when we got back to Kansas City, in Kansas, they asked us if we'd be interested possibly running for governor, because they just felt like the field was just kind of undefined and maybe not some really strong candidates out there. And I'd never even thought about that. But I've always felt that if somebody in high levels of leadership and people you respect are approaching you and asking you to do something, listen and talk to them and find out about it. And so we've been on this journey now. I don't know what we're going to do. I'm a 6th generation Kansan. I love Kansas. I love what it stands for. I love the people. And I just care deeply about the issues that affect the future. I don't know if I can make a difference or not, but we're still looking at it. I've met with a lot of people. I've learned a lot. But really one of the things that I've learned as much as anything is just how this game of baseball shapes us and molds us and prepares us for high levels of leadership. And it doesn't matter. I mean, especially the players that are playing this game today, I believe should be and can be some of the best leaders this country and this world has ever seen, because the game prepares you to be a great leader. And you're forced to, you've got to think every single day. You've got to manage challenges and setbacks every single day. Your mind and your body have to be aligned. You've got to go to bed at night and put good things in your body, and you've got to prepare if you're going to be successful on the field. Well, that's the key to leadership. A lot of people are really, really smart, but they're not ready to take on the challenges of each day because physically and mentally, they're not prepared to do that. Baseball players, to be successful, they've got to be prepared to do that, right? And they deal with diversity constantly, mm-hmm. and they understand different cultures. The beauty of a baseball team is we start spring training, there's 70 guys in the clubhouse, they all have different beliefs, different religions, different levels of politics, they come from different families, they all have different levels of economic worth and value and what have you. And they get to know each other, and the season starts, and there's 26. And again, they all have different values and different ways of looking at the world. But they start doing life together, and they realize that, you know what, we've got a lot of things in common. And they become a team, and they become a family. I've never been in a clubhouse on the last day of the season where guys weren't hugging and teared up because they're going to miss each other. And sometimes it's the guys you had never ever thought that would ever have time together. And that's the beauty of baseball. And baseball players understand that unity. They understand that sacrifice. It's not immediate gratification, and they know how to deal with people. And so my message would be to the entire baseball world, you're prepared to get involved in much higher levels of leadership. And I would encourage you to do that. And again, I don't know what we'll ultimately do, but I got a feeling we're going to be serving Kansas in our community at some level, because that's what we've been doing since we got into baseball, and whether it be with the Braves or the Royals or now with the Rangers. We've always tried to use this platform to help, grow leaders and provide opportunities for other people. And that's what baseball gifts us to do in leadership.
When, it's when you talk about getting into it and exploring it and learning, I would love to have the idea of where you get Congress or you get governors or whatever, having that embrace at the end of a year. That's not happening. So I would imagine.
You gotta be willing to disadvantage yourself for somebody else.
Oh yeah.
Listen, you gotta be able to do that.
You're so right about the clubhouse. It's such an eclectic place, and they're around each other. And honestly, Dayton, like, I think that that's one of the reasons I think they're really, the clubhouse baseball has probably been the least political of any of the locker rooms, because when you walk into there, you have to see each other every day for 7 or 8 months. And there's some things, like, I'm all for debate, but there's some things that you just aren't going to crack through, and you don't want to have to be next, all of a sudden talk to them about the common bond is baseball. They're talking baseball.
Right. So, that's right.
But one of the things that, you know, when you're exploring this idea and this potential opportunity, what are some of the things that have surprised you about it? And what are some of the things that maybe has gotten you fired up about it?
Well, one of the things that fires me up about it is, I've realized that we have, and not everybody, there's a lot of beautiful men and women that are doing great things in the political world. They really and truly care about serving others, and their stories reflect that. But there's certainly a lot of people out there for own personal gain. And leadership begins and ends with putting others first. And there are many in our society that are more than capable of succeeding, you know, on their own merits, and they know how to make things work. And we I respect that. And we've got to free those individuals up to continue to do good things. But there's also a segment of our society that does feel left out. They don't feel like they have a voice. They have the same dreams and aspirations for their children that, you know, that everybody has. And we really got to come alongside and lift them up. And, you know, those are the things that excite me about that. I don't know if you can make a difference or not. Maybe I'm being naive. And again, I'm not sure we're going to ultimately end up pursuing this. You know, we're listening. And of course, you know, Rob, the one thing is that's really discouraging to me, truthfully, is you got to raise so much money. Hmm. You got to raise all this money, to highlight self and to bring down your opponent, when that money could go to, you know, so many other different, pockets of the community and help families, help restore families, help, you know, small business and people get started and pay down debt. And it can go to a lot of different things, but it takes millions and millions of dollars, even in a state like Kansas, to get somebody elected. And where does that money go? That money goes to highlight me, I, not we and us. And then it goes to put down other people and their families. And because when you're attacking the patriarch or the matriarch of a family, you're also attacking their family and their community. I mean, words written and spoken should be done to encourage and to lift up. Now, tell the truth, but you can always tell the truth in a positive, encouraging way. And so the money you got to raise is, full transparency, I've never given a dollar to a political campaign. So why now I'm going to ask someone else to give to, I want you to give your money to, you know, give it to your church, give it to a charity, give it to a single mother, help get a, you know, invite a young boy or young girl over to your house to help cut your lawn or wash your windows and earn their way through college and, you know, help them. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's single mothers out there. There's young families that are only going to have one child because if they have two or three, they're going to grow themselves poor and they can't afford daycare. And so, you know, look to your right, look to your left and and subsidize. I'm not asking the government to subsidize anything. I don't want the government to subsidize most things. But as human beings, and there's so much wealth in this country, we can pick out a young family and say, you know what, we're going to pick up your daycare bill for this month. Just do it. Do it anonymously and take care of people. That's what it's all about at the end of the day. And that's what, but that's the beauty. Baseball, we learn that in baseball.
Yeah.
We're taught to take care of the young player and the young executive and the young scout. We're paying their meals and we're taking care of them and we're doing special things for them. And, you know, we're taught to do that, to look out for, you know, kind of the lesser of these. And, so those are the things that get me excited and get me fired up and you know, want to try to do more and inspire, but can you do it? I don't know.
Well, I'll say this, Dayton, is that, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever role you have in baseball going forward, and, you know, if I had a team, sorry, I don't, but if I had a team, you'd be hired as the guy who ran the team like yesterday. I would, because, and obviously, you know, in terms of leading and caring for people and the political realm, I would be right behind you, because the biggest thing, all that we've talked about today is the foundation of what's important. The foundation of what's important. We can have, I can get a tattoo of Baseballs and Boring right here with Joe Kelly. That's important in one way. You know, I can have fun. I can go into a clubhouse and talk about pitch shapes with someone. That's important in its own way. But the foundation of all of it is what you were talking about. And,
no doubt. And
so that's why I think, you know, I thank you so much for giving this message, man. I really do. So,
well, it's, you know, we've been blessed to be around some great people and, learned a lot, from a lot of individuals and, again, just inspired by who they are. And, you know, I get to watch Bruce Bochy every single day right now, cares greatly about people and keeps things simple and loves information. Bobby was the same way. Ned, I mean, I remember, you know, being a part of Buddy Bell early on. I admired the man greatly. Trey Hillman was one of the best baseball teachers I've ever been around. And Ned Yost, Mike Matheny, unbelievable competitors that cared deeply. And, you know, so I've been around some wonderful people and appreciate, you know, being on the podcast.
All right, Dayton. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. All right, Rob. Thank you.